Hello, you're listening to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. If some of our discussions and tips are working for you, why don't you grab a 15-minute call with us at ecommercecall.com. We'll see whether we can help scale your e-commerce business. We will quickly see if we're a fit or whether we can recommend someone else to get you where you need to go. The worst case is you'll have a fun 15-minute chat, and regardless, you'll come away understanding a lot more about your business. Book a call at ecommercecall.com. Welcome to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. This week, we're going to dive into offer architecture. This is one of the most important aspects for getting your site right. It's almost like a switch. If you have it on and it's working, you can scale at will. If you haven't got it right, everything can be stuck in the doldrums. So pay attention. We're going to a lot of detail about what works and what doesn't work, and hopefully you enjoy it.
Hi Mark, how are you doing?
I'm all right, how are you? Been a while?
Very good. Well, it has been. We've been Christmas, we've had Christmas.
Thought everybody would not want to listen to us over Christmas, give them a break. But now back into it.
Yes.
So today I thought we'd do one on offer architecture, because probably the biggest changes, like step changes we've seen for especially some of our bigger clients, well, even scaling, you know, from small clients is getting the offer architecture right. And that has been massive, because it really leverages all your marketing channels and your marketing messages and your you know, your post-purchase funnels. All those kind of stuff comes down to offer architecture and having a good, and I know you're at the coal face of this. So I've asked three or four people for some questions about offer architecture, and I'm going to put you on the hot seat.
Okay. Let's go.
So good. First of all, do you want to talk about the three R's first, just to kind of give people a bit of a background on offers?
Yeah, as an introduction to the subject, it's so, so important to get the offer architecture, and there's nothing else that you can do within your e-commerce business that's going to have a bigger impact, really, especially when you are growing from a smaller number. You know, forget the color of your buttons. You know, forget what homepage image you've got. It is about where the model's looking, or what your filters you've got open, or whatever. The offer architecture is like do or die. So it is huge. You've got to get it right. Going back to the market square test, where, you know, you're in the market square and everyone is selling the same stuff thing you are, and that's what online's like. So essentially, it's something that I think I probably spend 50% of my time with clients talking about, is this offer architecture. And you roughly break it down. I mean, this is going back to really the direct mail days, where it's the three R's: your recruitment, your retention, your reactivation, and what the strategy is around those three groups. And obviously, you can break it down to so many different segments and all sorts of clever vingtiles and all sorts of things, and your RFM modeling and all that sort of thing. But actually, to start off with, you know, you need an offer strategy for those three R's, and it should be different. So what's your recruitment strategy? How are you going to recruit new customers? And then retention is what you're going to do to get them back buying again and again. And then the reactivation one is, well, what happens if they don't buy, you know, over a period of time? How are you going to get them back? So what's the lasso that you're going to use? And it's all about the offer. It really, really is. And this is fundamentally what retail is doing. I mean, it's absolutely the same.
What amazes me is how, you know, I guess from the beginning, when I wasn't aware of this, you're sitting there, you think you're selling the same thing, probably for the same similar price, but then you package it in an offer and suddenly it starts selling. And that doesn't fundamentally make sense to you at that point, because you're like, well, I'm selling the same thing, it's the same product, surely people aren't as, you know, they aren't as affected by things. But they are, and it makes a huge difference the way you package it up and the way you put it together. So that kind of leads us to David's questions, who I was having a chat with yesterday. And he was in the position where he's saying, well, he's seen a lot of people say, don't discount. You know, he's looking at people like Apple and they say, well, they don't discount and they don't do their stuff. And people saying, oh, I should never, you should never do a discount because it hurts your brand. And so what, that's a question we get a lot. And how would you answer that?
Yeah. It's every single e-commerce client that we've ever worked with is asked that question. And it's something that I talk about weekly. And fundamentally, I think the danger is that if you don't, I think the worry that David's got is that if he recruits customers at a discount, are they always going to expect a discount? And is it just, am I just then going to become known as a discounter? And will it affect my lifetime customer value? And every single time that we have convinced a client, and honestly, it's like you sit down with a client and you might spend 2 or 3 years trying to convince them to go down the route of being much more savvy with the offer. And then eventually after 3 years, they agree. And all of a sudden it's like, bang, growth, scalable growth. And
sometimes it's actually been the e-commerce managers left. We've finally been able to implement what we wanted to do. And then suddenly it's shot up the revenue and it's like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, exactly. And so the difference is, if you use an offer, you will recruit a lot more customers than if you don't. And the lifetime customer value we've seen, it is identical. You know, because you think they're only going to buy if there's an offer, but they spend the same amount. But if you get your offer right, you'll recruit like 5 times more than you would without an offer. And obviously, it depends on your type of business. You know, if you're selling someone else's product, and I know Edward's actually selling his own brand, which means he's got. Sorry, David. Sorry, I think Edward's coming up, isn't he?
Yeah, here's another question.
But David's selling his own brand, which means he's got a little bit more control. He with his pricing architecture, he can actually put his prices up to allow him to do a better offer. And remember, there's only two ways you can get people to buy now. If they're on your site and they like something, there are only two things you can do to get them to buy now rather than putting it off till later. Number one, give them something you're going to take away, saying, look, if you buy today or you buy this week, I'll give you 20% off your first purchase. You come back next week, that 20% is gone. And the second way is adding the element of scarcity there, saying, oh, there's only a few left, don't miss out.
It gives you a layer of excitement, isn't it? Adding a layer of excitement with an offer. And if you think about Apple, Apple's offer is the fact they're bringing out new products all the time. So if you took that away, which is what's providing the excitement, they wouldn't be able to sell nearly as much. Probably 80% of the revenue probably comes from the excitement that comes around new products. So if you've got a site where you're coming out with limited edition new products all the time, great. That's your offer architecture. That's all you need. Obviously, you need to have a market that wants those things coming out all the time. But if you're like most stores, your new products are not going to drive enough revenue to drive your business. So therefore, you have to create the excitement in a different way. And that is, 95% of retail use offers, discounts, and buy one, get one threes.
It depends on how and on what stage your business is at. So if you're doing, 100,000, £200,000 a year revenue, and you don't have big marketing budgets, you cannot go and afford to go and advertise on all the underground in London or New York. You've got a marketing budget that almost needs to pay for itself daily. If you're doing a paid channel, so you've got to get them to convert. And I'm a big believer of that. Once somebody buys from you, they become a brand ambassador for you. And then
you're in play then, aren't you? You're in play. You've got a customer. You're getting streams of customer, and it's much easier to turn those customers into, you know, higher value, long term customers than not having any customers at all.
Well, and look at businesses like the White Company. You know, the White Company is an amazing example of this because they are, you know, I mean, I think they're doing like 100 million now. You know, they're a discounter, but they look great. Mm. You know, and they you know, a lot of businesses like this. I mean, Cox and Cox is one. I mean, any sort of home furnishing, emotional, lifestyle type company. You know, the way they grow, their businesses grow when their customer list grows. Mm. You know, so you have to get the customers on the list, and once you've got the customers on the list, then it becomes really profitable.
Yeah, one thing you know, always say is that what they are is they're discounters, but they don't look like discounters.
Yeah. Yeah,
so you don't go out look like a Blackpool Pleasure Beach. You basically look like a high end brand, but really actually recruiting through offers that you would probably only see maybe through certain channels and different ways.
And it's VIP exclusive, you know, clubs, you know, and it's all those, you know, member cards and things like that, making people feel special. And it's different if you're, you know, a hardware store like Screwfix Direct. You know, that's like, you know, 10% off, you know, 2 for 1. And it's very, so the way that you architect and display the offer is really important. It's got to be right for your brand.
Yeah, it's got to align with the brand.
It doesn't matter if you're selling, you know, beautiful luxury, you know, emotional lifestyle products, or you're selling a problem-solving rational purchase. You know, you'll scale when you get your offer right.
Mm. And also the reason why when you have a brand, if you have, if you just put an offer out there, fair enough. But if you have a reason why you've had the offer, it's so much more convincing. There's that psychological study where people were queuing for the photocopier, and if they gave a reason why to butt in, it was 80% more likely to actually get put in. So it's the same with offers. Give people a reason why. And the reason why can align very much along with the brand. You know, we're having a sale because this and this goes along with what we're trying to do as a brand and what our mission is, etc. So it's about creating that story around the offer as well that links with your brand story. Just want to come on to Jane. So Jane's question, she was talking about, she's got a lot of customers that we would define as lapsed. So they haven't bought for over 18 months, and you know, so that'd be interesting. So what your definition of a lapsed customer is, and also what kind of offer you would do and how you'd put that together for a lapsed customer.
Well, it depends on your natural lifetime customer value, which we would define as how many times a year they buy. So if your customers are buying, you know, 4 times a year on average, then a definition of a lapsed customer might be 6 months. But if they're buying once every 2 years, it's high average order value, then the lap, you know, your lapsed customer might be 2 years. So that does change. But essentially what you're looking for is an automated program, like a lasso, and not just one email, but, you know, it might be that you send them a postcard. You know, obviously email is going to be a big one. But you really need to give them a great offer to pull them back.
So what you're talking about is a lapsed customer marketing series, which involves maybe phone, maybe post and email and Facebook. So basically you've got your market media message, you know, in a way that works. So it's building that up.
Needs to be completely automated. You shouldn't have to worry about it. It should be set up, going. So you don't have to go and think, oh, I better email my customers who haven't bought as a one-off. It should be continual. Like every day, you know, your customers should be getting, if they go over this certain time and haven't bought, they should be getting an automated sequence of events, you know, without you having to think.
And then separating that off, separate from the other marketing, and then split testing that until it starts reactivating those customers, then you know it's working. Because unless you actually separate those off as a segment, you can't see. Because if you're just normally just sending the normal newsletter emails to those, and you go, oh, that was a good email, but was that a good email for the new customers or the recent customers or the lapsed customers. You know, there's different methods of reactivating the lapsed customers that's going to, you know, because obviously they've been getting the newsletters you've been sending and they haven't reacted to them. So you now need to do something slightly different in order to pique their interest.
Typically, you know, your most aggressive offers should be your recruitment offer should be fairly aggressive because they don't know who you are. So you have to work harder to get them to buy for them to take the risk. Your retention one in the middle is really trying to get them to buy more frequently to get the lifetime customer value up. You don't necessarily have to give them the big deals. But then your reactivation one, you tend to be more aggressive again. So the last one, the last R. And that's the general rule. You just have to continue playing with it. Tweaking it.
Edward, who you mentioned before.
Yes.
He is asking, he wants to increase his average order value because what he's found is that he can recruit through his offer with his purchase product, but he's finding that his return on ad spend is not quite as high as he needs it to be to kind of scale. So he's hit a kind of level. So I was saying to him, look, if you get your average order value up, then it's obviously going to increase your return on ad spend, and therefore you're going to be able to go after a lot more traffic. So what would you do to, what kind of offer architecture would you do is to increase the AOV?
Well, I think we were talking about it on one of the podcasts earlier where we were saying that, you know, there's jewelry businesses where their whole method was to get people to come in and spend, you know, £50. And they said, well, if you spend £100, you get £50 off anyway. So, you spend £150 and you get £75 off. And essentially, you go in and the more they designed it so that essentially the offer is designed to get you to spend more.
Scalable offer.
And obviously the maths worked it out so that at this point, let's push this. Essentially, because the margins were the same based on a £50 product versus a £150 product. They made more money. But and that's what they do. And that could be a great offer. So you go in based on you get them to push them up. And the things like the delivery threshold can work well with that. But then generally you're trying to use an offer. And I think, you know, I'm a big fan, and this is almost like money for nothing. But the offer could also be like, we talk about the sweetie page, which is the work like between the basket and the checkout, where there's this page there, and it essentially says, look, whilst you're here buying this thing, you know, whatever it might be, you know, an oak stool, it says, whilst you're here, you know, if you buy this, there's this throw, because everyone likes throws for the sofa, you know, normally this is £50. If you buy this with this order today, we'll give you the throw for £30. We come back tomorrow, it's £50. And it's like, oh, I really like that. And it's on the door. It's like, that's just money for nothing. So that's an offer architecture that's getting your average order value up. You're giving people
also
a reason.
Also, 3 for 2s. You know, buy 2, get 1 free. Works really well. And then, you know, anything that is going to make the person think, I'll just add that, and making it easy for them to add that extra item, and making it a no-brainer would make sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So Elliot has seen a big competitor of hers discounting. She's seen a big discounter not discounting. So big discounter doesn't discount, and she's trying to just copy those guys, and she's not getting anywhere. She is in clothing. She's doing clothing, women's clothing, and she's doing similar dresses to a big competitor, and they're not discounting. And she's like, well, they don't discount, so I don't want to discount. So what would you talk? What would you talk to her?
Well, I think, and I think we've probably seen this many times over the years, but there's a trap that's smaller e-commerce, it doesn't actually matter whether or not you're small. I mean, when I say small, I'm saying something like, you know, under 5 million.
There's a trap that you fall into where you think, well, if Ralph Lauren has their website like this, then it must be great. It must work. So we want our website to look like that, and we don't want to do a discount because we don't want to do an offer there because Ralph Lauren don't, and and that's how they've maintained it. But it's very dangerous to do that because for number one, everybody knows who these big brands are, so the rules are different. It's incredibly easy to scale a big brand that everybody knows. It's the e-commerce manager's dream job, to get it. It's like, it's dead easy. They're doing, 100 million. It's like, they don't have to do anything. They've got this massive brand recognition, people, it's totally different. And so, and they've got probably, £10 million a year of marketing budget. So it's totally the value propositions that are already there. The reassurances that everything's there. Whereas, if you're doing under 5 million, you just cannot emulate, the strategy of a bigger brand.
Chances are when people come to your website, if you're doing under 5 million, chances are when people come to your website, it is the first time they've ever heard of you. So therefore, it's a completely new conversation with them in their head. One thing that I always kind of explain this way, let's say you, Ian, decided to put out a perfume and call it Ian's Eau de Toilette. You then went to look at a Dior perfume advert, and you says, right, well, I want mine to look like that. I'll just put some kind of esoteric women in the background looking wistfully into the distance, and I'll have my perfume bottle on there, and I'll call it Ian's Eau de Toilette. And then you stick that in the magazine. And it's like, that just wouldn't work, would it? Because people are coming to that advert, like that Dior advert, with so much mental models of what that brand exists and what it means. Is you just can't do it. If you were going to go and sell a perfume, you would have to use flanking marketing and kind of go, right, I'm going to go and serve a part of the market that does it, that currently Dior is completely uninterested in. So people who are allergic to flowers or something like that. So I'm going to be, I'm going to start there. I'm going to become the best perfume for people who are allergic to certain scents or something like that. And then you could start and you could get some sales on that. And then you can gradually morph over time into the Dior, because when these brands started, they were very, they all started small, but they served a very small subset of customers to start with, who then that was then leveraged over and over and over and over again till it became a big brand. So like, going back to Elliot, she can't just copy the big brand, because people are coming to the big brand and they know who they are, and they're buying it. So she has to do something different in order to get the interest for those people that either the big brand is not serving well, or she's doing it in a better way for a subset of the customers that she could service, and using architecture to get that woodwork.
Yeah, totally. And I remember it. I think we probably mentioned this before, but a really good example of this is a client of ours who was selling lighting online. Pretty big player, doing pretty well, but was looking at made.com, and made.com is an e-commerce site in the UK that is massive now. I mean, it's huge. And you're looking at made.com site, and there's actually loads of great things on made.com site, but from an offer perspective and a homepage, you look at the messaging that made.com was doing 10 years ago when they first launched that business, and you compare that to now, and they don't need to say, we source from direct and we bring it from direct from the factories to the consumer, cutting out the middleman, saving you money. That's what they said as their main strat line and offer architecture 10 years ago. They don't say that now because they don't need to, because they've got such big brand recognition. But if you look, if you what's quite good is to go use the Wayback Machine, which is a website, waybackmachine.org, or I can't remember what, you Google Wayback Machine, put in, you can put your big, you know, your benchmark emulation sites and see what their
See how they grew the message.
What was their USPs and what was their offer strategy?
You can't necessarily, I mean, you go back with maybe you know, 5-6 years ago, and that message probably wouldn't work today because the market has changed, but it gives you an idea about how they had to position themselves and how they had to have something in order to kind of make sure, because you know, back in the day, they were coming up against DHS and those kind of people.
Yeah, and a lot of these, you know, the real fast growing, you know, e-commerce online sites have grown by really getting the offer right, like Zappos, you know, 365-day returns policy. Mm. You know, that's part of their offer. And it's like, it's so, so critical. You know, you've got to look in your market, look at the anxieties that people make. You know,
one thing always fascinates me.
And can I just say one thing? I'm going to finish. Important. Like the returns, thing. If people are so anxious in your industry about, you know, the returns policy, you know, be really bold. And then if you get returns, which you won't, but if you, it won't really increase. But if you do, you put it down as a marketing cost.
You're going to get some returns. What you mean is they're not going to increase.
Not going to increase. Yeah. No. So if you can recruit more by having a 365-day or like, you know, 80 free sleeps, you know, if you're selling, you know, sheets or bedding or mattresses, if you could be really bold with your returns policy and you get your return, put that down as a marketing cost, not a bloody product cost. It's a marketing cost. So, you know, that's how important it is. And it should not be considered in you know, any other department. So it's a marketing thing. You increase your conversion rate from 2% to 3%. By offering a 365-day, you know, return, no criminal returns, you know, and that's going to make, you know, another £1 million. And actually, you're only going to get, you know, 0.01% of an increase on your returns. Bloody hell, do it.
Mm. What I was going to say is that because I've been working with a few people this week, and I'm always amazed that, like, I'll go and say, well, what is the returns policy and what is the delivery and blah, blah, blah. And I'll go and I'll have to search for it on the site. And I'm like, and I'll go and look it up. I'll go on the returns page and I go, you're offering people free returns and you do that. And they're not even talking. They just hide it.
I know. Like halfway down the page in like, you know, 400 word
text paragraph. Well, not
even that.
Like it's not on the product page. It's not on the basket page. And then you have to go into the footer to find the returns policy. And in the footer and the returns policy, it's like, oh, yeah, we offer free returns and it's free postage and blah, blah, blah. And it's, you know, and it's like, wow. And, first of all, I would always encourage people to make their policies part of their advertising, part of their marketing. And when they've done that, then bring them out onto the product page and bring them out onto the basket page so that they become things that convince people to go with you rather than someone else. Because this is obvious to me having seen it, but I guess it's not obvious to a lot of people who just kind of go and set their store up and go, oh, there's a link there for the returns policy. I better put that down there.
So I think they just fall into the trap of thinking, right, I've got my product on the page. That's it. You know, it's like, you've really got into the head. And just imagine, it's like online is like walking into the Trafford Centre, which is a big shopping arcade in Manchester, and every shop in there is on the same thing you are. It might not be the same brand if you're selling your own brand, but it might be the selling, you know, of soap. You know, well, everybody in Trafford Centre is selling soap.
Yeah.
So it's like, you have to, and if you get that offer right, you will scale. It's the most important consideration.
Well, if you think about the offer, what the offer should be doing is to be selling, you know, one thing we've talked about in the course, which I haven't talked about actually. So anyway, we've got a course, and on the course, one of the modules is a jobs to be done module. So you go in to work out, you know, not what the product they're buying, but what the job to be done that the product is going to ultimately fix. So what task there is to be done. And so your offer really, you know, offer architecture, which includes your discounting and your returns policy and all those kind of stuff, should be leading them to get the job to be done in the best way possible. So, you know, people aren't buying a soap, they're buying a clean body. They want to smell fresh during the day. So, you know, that's the job to be done. So how can your offer actually make sure that happens? And you can have a guarantee to say, you know, if you get any, if you don't feel fresh and clean, then you get free money back guarantee or something like that. Because, you know, ultimately something like soap is very cheap for you to actually manufacture. And you can have a big offer architecture where it actually builds the value, which means people pay a little bit more for it. If you have this big jobs to be done kind of offer architecture that really plays in. Just wanted to kind of talk a little bit about the people who've come onto the Mastermind group. I'm encouraging them to listen to the podcast. So hello to those guys. The Mastermind group starts tomorrow. So I'm looking forward to speaking to everybody tomorrow. And obviously they're going through the online course as well. So really excited about that. And
cool.
Yeah. Do you have anything else to say, Ian?
Yeah. Well, in terms of the offer architecture, I mean, it's just so important. It's more important than anything. So, you know, and you have to make sure it's consistent. So you can't, you know, you can't have one offer on Facebook and then one offer on the site and then one offer on the email. It's all different. So it has to be consistent. And also, one thing I would just say is how you do the offer. If you are going to do a monetary based offer, you can either do a percentage off, or you can do a cash off. So you can say £20 off, or 20% off. Often £20 off, and it sounds better. And also use coupons, not the strike through. And that's important as well. That if you use if people come to the site and it says, oh, we're on sale, and it's, you know, £200, and now it's 100. Well, people go, oh yeah, right. You know, it wasn't. They don't believe it. But if you bring people to the site and it says, right, it's you know, it's £150, and you know, and if you sign up for our exclusive premium, you know, first customer, we will give you 30% off this. But you have to put your email here. You have to use the coupon. So you're making them use a coupon, which then they physically press it, and it makes them think they're getting something for nothing. And you can then make it time bound, and you can use that coupon to follow up in all the emails and remarketing message. It's just so much better.
If they were going into a physical store and everything was priced max, you know, max price, and they had a physical coupon in their hand, they would feel like they were genuinely getting.
Yeah, and they think, oh, everyone else in the shop is paying full price. Yeah. Oh, I've got this. You'd almost feel guilty. You almost want to go, oh, you feel guilty. You don't want to show it off. You think, oh, God, everyone's going to be cross with me. That's what you need to make them feel.
Yeah, but if you didn't have a coupon.
It keeps the brand values high.
Yeah, it makes them actually feel like they're getting that £500 suit, £250. Like, oh, I'm getting a £500 suit.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's actually on the product and it's discounted down to 250, you're like, oh, they've obviously had to discount it down because it wasn't selling, you know, that particular suit, and that one's, you know, probably not worth that, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. So I'd say generally the retail high street is like way better at this than online. You know, there's really good people that do this really well. I mean, Boots, famous for 3 for £2, you know, Go Outdoors, you know, the big outdoor shop, you know, they've got this discount club card, and it's like members, you know, with the discount card it's this price. You need to look at people like that, and you're going to emulate that. It's so important. Get it right, your business will scale. If you don't get your offer architecture right, you will sit there and you'll struggle. It won't work.
Yeah because you'll be fighting against someone who has figured it out. And they've got the excitement, they've got the offer excitement, and people go, oh, I'm going to do that because that's a no-brainer, and I'm getting the value and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Exactly. You obviously need your offer architecture for your existing customers too. And then that'll help you be able to spend more on your pay-per-click, because you know that this customer's buying, you know, 5 times a year rather than once, which means you can afford to recruit more. So it's all a maths game.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I think we'll leave it there. I think we'll leave it there. That's a good half hour of us chatting about offer architecture, and I think that's probably enough for most people.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, if you haven't watched our case study video, please do so. I'm going to put it in the show notes underneath. That takes you through a kind of slightly largest customer that had quite significant growth, and we just wanted to go through and show the whole methodology in one go. So that's a good primer for what we're talking about. So go into that. You do have to give us your email address. That's because we obviously want to keep this a little bit more secret than just kind of putting it out there. We don't want to share it with our competitors. So yeah, please go watch the case study video, and we'll speak to you next time.
Cool. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.